Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of 90s Horror Films. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. I'm here with
Paul Presenza, otherwise known as the Moo Cow. Moo, 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 moo.
Yes, thank you for your theme song right there. All right, and we're here to talk about the 1993 Canine Gone Wild film, Man's Best Friend.
Who let the dogs out? Woof, 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 woof.
Don't sue us over that, you know, whatever your something, whatever their name is. Let's first talk about, you had never seen this movie before I showed it to you.
No, I remember it being out there. I remember probably most critics thinking it was garbage. I remember thinking, ooh, Ally Sheedy and Lance Henriksen, that's got to be a nice combination. But I never got around to seeing it.
No. And why, like, what was the thing that probably, you know?
I just crazy dog movies just don't really interest me. You know, I read Cujo, I saw Cujo, I wasn't impressed by either one of them. I can't really think of too many crazy monster dog movies that I've ever seen that I've honestly liked.
That you actually liked?
Yeah. So this just seemed like it would be yet another, so...
Yeah, it was sort of another, you know, one.
There's just so many movies to see. I just don't have enough time to watch everything. So even in the 90s, I just didn't have enough time for every movie that was out there. And I don't remember that this lasted too long in the theaters either.
I don't think it did. And from what I've read, it was in the... Like during Thanksgiving, you know, time.
Perfect time for a heartwarming film like this.
Yeah, you think, like, this would not be the appropriate, like, maybe Halloween
Pass
or something.
The turkey and the kitten and puppy corpses, please.
I know. It was not, this is not something you bring around the, was it, the dinner table and show everybody, you know? But it did well enough, I guess. It's not what would normally be my Hollywood knockbuster, I don't think. It did well enough where it... it didn't make a sequel, thank God, you know, because I honestly, after watching this again, I would not have wanted a sequel. We'll go into it. Why?
It reminds me somewhat of Santa's Sleigh, which is roughly the same period, but a similar kind of, you know, let's make a mean-spirited black comedy horror film.
Right.
Except Santa's Sleigh did that better. And I think they handled it better. I think it was written better than the way they did this.
So let's go into that then real quick. It is actually written and directed by John Lafia, who sadly died in 2020 at the age of 63. So I'm guessing maybe during COVID. I don't know if it was a COVID thing or it doesn't. Ooh, it was suicide.
Eek.
Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry to hear that. I was not aware of that. So, sorry. He directed, you know, he directed this movie, but he also was the writer of, you know, such big movies as Child's Play
right,
and
right.
He also did the sequel, Child's Play 2.
And, you know, again, Child's Play also, those are movies that also have sort of a black comedy sort of slant to them. But again, I think those movies were better than this one.
Yeah, he directed Child's Play 2, but did not write it. The co-writer of it, who's gone on to do Don Mancini, wrote that. And he directed episodes of Freddy's Nightmares. He did a movie called The Blue Iguana. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Dancing at the Blue Iguana?
It's just called The Blue Iguana.
Oh, okay. No,
I don't know. It's not Dancing at the Blue Iguana, but just called Blue Iguana. So I don't know if that's...
I don't know that one.
A different movie, obviously. He did a video game. He actually wrote or directed a video game called Corpse Killer. Sounds about right.
To kill the corpses.
He did a movie called Chameleon 3, Dark Angel. He did an episode of The Dead Zone, speaking of Stephen King from... Cujo from earlier. He was also the director of The Rats, I don't know if you've ever seen that or heard of it, but it's a
heard of it, never saw
it's
it.
a killer rats movie, obviously. But like, yeah, I think at that time he was sort of, you know, kind of falling on, you know, work, you know, or whatever. But he made this movie, he wrote and directed this. It was produced, let's go into the cast real quick, because we love the cast. As you said, it's got Ally Sheedy, who plays Lori Tanner in the movie. Lance Henriksen plays Dr. Jarrett. Robert Costanzo, who you recognized from multiple different movies, and you say he always plays a cop.
Oh, yeah.
This time he played a cop that just eats too much, I guess. He was in Die Hard 2, Total Recall, Saturday Night Fever. He was in a bunch of, he's been a bunch. Oh, he was in that movie we just bought, Beast Mode.
There you go.
From the Dollar Tree. So there you go. So he was in this. Frederick Lean, who you won't know, but I know from Supernatural. Like, that's my favorite part that he's ever done, is he played, I think, Azaziel or something, the demon there. I really loved him. That he plays the boyfriend, Perry, who I thought was, we'll get into each character, sort of.
Male.
Yeah, he kind of said he looked like Ben Affleck from Mallrats, right. You know, kind of thing.
His character reminded me of that.
Yeah, he had that, like, feel and, you know, scumbaggy, you know, stuff. Detective Benedetti was played by John Cassini, who I've seen in other stuff too. J.D. Daniels was Rudy. I'm guessing Rudy was the little kid that we saw that came in.
The one who just wanders in and out, yeah, of people's houses.
Yeah, just wanders in and out. He takes the pup,
food.
Takes the puppy for a walk, even though, like, puppy? That was, well, the dog, but, you know, but a big ass dog,
yes.
You know, for a walk, even though, you know, we'll get into that. We'll definitely get into that. Then there's Annie, and I'm guessing that was the girl, the African-American girl who was...
Yeah, I never caught her name.
Yeah, I think that was her name, because definitely never said her name. But they did say Judy Sanders.
She reminded me, actually, of the African-American chick from The Craft.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But it's not the same.
It's not the same girl, no. And that girl was played by Trula Marcus. And I don't know if Trula's done anything else big. She was in State of Play, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, The Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift, and The Rainmaker. But usually in small roles, like jewelry saleswoman or Carol or, well, you know, whatever, you know, like small little parts. Then there's also William Sanderson.
William Sanderson. And that was a shame, because that was kind of a shitty role.
It was a small role, too. It was almost not, yeah. That. Anybody could have played it, and they kind of, I mean, I guess they needed another semi-sort of name in this. Mm-hmm. And back then, though, like, okay, so nowadays, Lance Henriksen and... you know, William Sanderson are sort of those, like, cult names that you see in all these, like...
Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, you see in B-movies, and they pop up, you know, nowadays, aliens, whatever. They pop up in all these movies, and they've been, you know, doing pretty... You know, you always kind of expect them in your movies or whatever. And this, you know, so it was nice to see them together, even though they weren't in the same scenes, you know, in the same movie,
right,
you know?
Right.
I'm
sure they had William Sanderson for like half a day, and that's all they needed for that.
Oh yeah. Or maybe a day. That's it. I mean, if anything, they're probably only going to get him for a day and whatever, they're going to pay him his fee, you know, and get him and put him in this movie. So, all right, we never explain what the story is about really, but, this is what the IMDb says. A genetically mutated dog is stolen from the lab of mad scientist. Mad scientist. It sounds like he's like some kind of kooky, you know.
Unethical, yes.
Unethical, mad, no. He actually, he's a sort of a...
He's the only one that has any kind of sense in the film.
We'll talk about that, because you even said he had, that there was some sort of like, he wasn't he was doing stuff that, you know, he was dumb, you know, doing or whatever. So he didn't have some sense. And Dr. Jarrett, by news reporter, animal rights advocate, Lori Tanner, who conceals it from the police in her home. The dog, Max, endowed with intelligence and other special abilities, is at first lovable. I don't know. But also proves to be ferocious, unstoppable killer. Now.
Unstable.
Unstoppable killer. But here's the thing. He was sort of like, there are points where you sort of loved the dog and stuff. He was cute, you know, did whatever. But then he would do things that would make him not so cute that you'll be like, even you were saying, I would never have that dog in my house, right?
Yeah, from the first moment I saw him.
Yeah, he's too big. He's too slobbery. He's too, like, you can't control him, obviously.
He's a 500-pound dog.
It's right.
Huge. That's not really a lap dog.
No. And Ally Sheedy the whole time was kind of treating him like a lap dog, you know, which was a little wrong. But, you know, that's sort of where the story goes. You know, that's what the whole point is, that she quickly forms a connection with the dog. And you even said that it wouldn't be. But I have told you that, you know, my dog Rocky, the minute I saw a picture of him, I was like, that's,
I
fell in love.
It's for the movie. You have to compress it so that it fits within the time frame of the narrative. So.
I don't know. I think when it comes to animals and dogs and pets, that there is this sort of like bonding real quick, you know, if you really like feel that for the dog, you know. And so I didn't mind that at all. But anyway, to go back to the story. So we'll begin at the beginning. So basically, as it was said, this, you know, Ally Sheedy has been wanting to get inside this lab, you know, and do, you know, whatever. And she...
To the point where she's bribing one of the current assistants there, $500, to sneak her in.
Judy, yes. Yeah. And Judy...
Speaking of unethical.
Yep. And Judy... is just, I guess, like, you know, fuck it, you know, like, I don't know if she likes, she doesn't even like her job, it doesn't, she's screaming at the monkeys and, you know, trying just to listen to some.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest problems with the film, too. I don't like any of the characters. I really didn't.
Yeah, there wasn't really any
room for it.
There was nobody, Dr. Jared, maybe, a little bit, but, like, just all I wanted was Dr. Jared to get the dog back into the lab so they can continue whatever they were doing, you know, because like
it.
To fix everything, yeah, or just, you know, just get rid of this dog because this dog was just too dangerous.
And it would have been fine if the dog was just killing people, but unfortunately,
yeah, we will get into that in a second.
Unfortunately,
but so you get into the lab and you realize the dog's already escaped and kills Judy, the girl who, you know, doesn't give a crap. So they hide her body, I guess, or something, and they tranquilize the dog and they kind of set him.
I mean, they never really explain what happens to the body.
They don't in most cases, except for the mailman. But most of the time, like, anybody dies just dies, you know, or whatever. He just kills people, you know. But we'll get into that. It's like a slasher film. And I think maybe that's another reason you don't like it. It's kind of like a slasher film. You don't like slasher films because you don't... You know, you don't like them going after. And it's like a slasher film with pets, you know? Like not your type of movie. So we're watching this movie, and so the dog kills the girl and gets tranquilized and put back in a cage. The girl, Ally Sheedy, can't find that girl. So she doesn't know what she's going to do, but they sneak in anyway, very
easily.
Very easily. I mean, look.
Past the one security guard.
Yeah, past one security guard.
No cameras.
Who was just letting people in anyway, like, you
no
know, their job.
Sensors.
Yeah. Nothing.
Highly, you know, important and critical research.
And you even said, like, when they were basically found the dog, they wanted to do a video of, and there's this light shining that the first thing a security guard is supposed to do is call the cops, probably. Mm-hmm. They don't just go in to go investigate themselves, you know, because that's a bit above their pay grade, you know, whatever. Right? So they're there just to make sure that the people, they can stop the people if they have to, but,
you know, 1993,
right. They have no jurisdiction to actually arrest anybody or anything. So like, what could they do if they can't stop the person, you know, like literally they wouldn't even be able, a security guard wouldn't be able to like hold a person.
And you know, Lance Henderson was saying earlier that they had a bunch of animal rights protesters previously. So
wouldn't their security be ramped up?
Calling the cops first thing.
Yeah, they'd be like, oh my God, there's...
They broke in, so I can't do anything, so I'll call the cops.
I am wondering if, I mean, the protesters thing, I'm wondering if that was actually a... just a diversion, you know, for him saying that, just so that he didn't have to talk about the, because at first he doesn't want to tell them what he's doing, you know.
Right.
So he did mention the, you know, the thing, because he knows it was a, he knows they were most likely news reporters or something. I think he had a feeling because they had the camera right on him and everything, you know. So I'm thinking that huge giant camera right on him. So he had to know that these were not just protesters coming in, that they were somebody, you know, whatever. That was my guess, and I think he was using it as a diversion. So I'm wondering if there were actual protesters or not, you know, because we never really hear much more about that other than him saying it. So but anyway, to go back to the whole thing, so you know, they escape and the dog escapes. And dog goes with them, of course.
I had a little Kevin Smith flashback there. I was thinking, you know, when they go and they save the monkey.
Right.
I was kind of like, I was kind of hoping it was going to sort of go that way with the comedy parts, but.
Oh, no, no, really no. It really didn't go. Like, the comedy parts were so utterly.
Inadvertent.
Yeah, over the top, too. Like, at times, you know. We'll get to some of the comedy bits that were sort of almost felt awkward at times too.
Yeah, cringy.
Yeah. Just because, you know, and look, I mean, if you have a dog, you know, but you can't have a dog like, you know, the dog's not Chucky, right? Like, this guy could write Chucky well with the little quips and with little one-liners and shit. Can't really do that with a dog unless one of the things you altered, genetically altered, were voice. You know, where the dog's not barking, but dog's talking.
But then,
that could be sort of interesting, except it would be, you know.
Then you have Eric Roberts and a talking cat. You well, don't want that.
No, but, like, you could have made it, they could have made it dark with him. Like, he could have been, like, all of a sudden he started talking, and he was like, I'm going to kill you, you know, right? Like,
except the other things, too, is that you'd have to do it in a Scooby-Doo voice, and it just wouldn't work. You know
no, what I mean? It just wouldn't work. It would be like, and then he'd be like, I'm going to kill you. You know, like, he'd actually have a human voice. They could have done something like that.
You can't really explain
how the human voice.
Do, no.
No, but
he's like, been constructed. He's been Frankensteined from genetic bits from these other animals. I mean, that's where he's supposed to get all these things from, which is ridiculous, by the way. So, in other words, he would have to also have human DNA in there for him to develop that. And it just...
The acid, though, there was no animal that pees acid. So what, I don't understand what that was.
Or lets him smell poison, or just, you know.
Be able to smell poison. What was the other one?
There was a lot of ridiculous.
There was a lot of, I mean, they did make him smart, because they did show the brain of the, like, chimpanzees or something. So made him somewhat smart, like he was supposed to be able to be capable, like, you know, we'll get into all that stuff. So... They bring in the dog. Well, before they bring the dog home, the girl gets mugged by a mugger. And you even said...
no other reason than to display his loyalty.
Exactly. And you even said that. You called it. You called it. And then the dog gets out of the... Opens up the door, car door, runs out after the guy, kills the guy, but we don't know this. And you were like, you said... You go, and I bet he's going to bring back the purse. And, of course, that's exactly what he did.
The best part of that scene is that guy totally, totally looked like Corey Feldman. Along there. It was so funny. I'm like, man, Corey Feldman really fell on hard times.
He was hurting for work, man. He'd be in anything at this point.
That's funny.
Playing anything. But, no, he, what is it? So, yeah, so later they bring the dog home. And the girl, was it Ally Sheedy, has this dog, and she has this boyfriend who she lies to him to explain that it's that
so that's gonna work.
That it was she didn't well she her idea was that she he'd eventually see it on TV and he'd know the whole story, but right now she doesn't want to lose the dog, you know. And at first, like, I get it, because, like, in a way, this is sort of her golden ticket. So if this dog just got into the wrong hands, then she couldn't do her.
And that's the part that troubles me, too. You would think that the whole point of all of this was for her to get the story, that it's the story that's important, because as a journalist, the story is going to become a big deal and make the national news and make her a star and everything.
Yeah, she even...
The story is, like, beside the point.
It's the whole point.
That
because,
gets her in the building.
Yeah,
right.
Because she's even talking about how she was going to do everything herself because she wanted to make sure that she became the news, right? She it didn't go to somebody else.
After that, the story is never even mentioned again.
It's sort of brought up at the end when they're looking at the file, the videos and stuff, when Dr. Jared sneaks in and stuff. But aside from that, really, yeah, you're right. Like, it becomes less about that story and it becomes more about the dog's journey and what's going on in this dog town. Once again, slasher-like, where he's just going around the town eating and killing and
everything,
you know, whatever and everything. So so the boyfriend hates that the dog lives here, and they already hate each other. We already see that there's a parrot that lives there. I love the parrot, by the way. Rest in peace, parrot. But he's like telling the guy, you know, screw you, you know, right? And it was that was funny. Like, that had some good humor to it. You even looked at me like, is the parrot gonna die? And I was like, I don't remember. And that was the thing. Like, I don't remember a lot of this enough to, like, go, oh shit. Like, and now that I've seen it, I'm like, fuck, everything, like, dies.
Spoiler alert, trigger warnings. If you don't want to see animals suffer, this may not be the movie for you.
Yeah, Lenore, you can't watch this movie.
Nope. We know a few people who probably
can't watch this movie.
There's a cat scene that's pretty rough for cat lovers out there.
It is. The only biggest problem with that scene, too, we'll go into that real quick, even though we'll probably talk, you know, briefly about it, too, again, but that scene went on way too long, you know, of eating the cat.
And, you know, those parts, again, were done for sort of a black humorous effect, but it just didn't really work. You know, it was too, you know, I don't know. Animal torture crosses the line for a lot of people. It does for me.
It does for me, too. And, so remember when we watched Zombievers and we were so sad that the beavers killed the dog, you know? And Courtney Palm kind of joked on us or whatever about that because, like, here we were, like, we sound like a bunch of vegans, you know, that, like, love all animals. And, oh, my God, we can't believe they killed the dog. This movie kills, like, almost every fucking animal.
Right.
And I'm, like, thinking, because when I first watched this movie back when I was younger, you know, after it came out and it was in, you know, I saw it on VHS back in the day. And I remember really liking it, you know, or whatever, because I think it was because it was something I hadn't seen before. Like, I hadn't seen this type of, I mean, I'd seen Cujo, but Cujo was a different kind of dog. Like, that was one that had, like rabies and seemed more real, you know, like a dog can get rabies and then start acting out. And, I've had a dog, you remember Bobo, and I loved him to death, but he got a lot of pain. When he got a lot of pain, he started lashing out. He bit me in the, like, mouth. He bit Sierra in the mouth. Like, he was a little dangerous, you know, and he's a big dog. And just like this dog, sadly, you know, you can't keep a dog like that, especially if they're in a lot of pain and they're going to lash out on everything. And that's what happened in this movie. But a lot more happened in this movie.
At least it wasn't Devil Dog Hound of Hell, where the dog gets possessed by Satan, which was a ridiculous movie.
Oh, That's an actual movie?
That's an actual. It was a made for TV Exorcist ripoff movie in the 70s.
And, you saw it?
Oh, yeah.
And it was terrible? Does it sound like an indie film cafe movie?
It would be if it weren't so boring. That's its main sin.
Oh, okay. Unfortunately. Well, this movie was not boring. I will say that. Mm-hmm. I will at least give it that.
It was competently made.
It was competently made. And we were actually talking about the stinkometer score that we give for Indie Film Cafe. And I jokingly said, like, you know, would you give it a 5 or something? You said, like, a 4 or 5.
5.5, I think.
I think.
As time went on, I was like, I liked it less and less.
Yeah, you liked it less and less. But it didn't get stinky because of that. It just got me pissed off, really. Yeah. It got you, like, more mad at it. And I think that was my problem with the movie, too, is after rewatching. Because I remember I watched it with Vittorio. And when we watched it, him and I watched it, we were just like, this is actually, you know, a pretty decent movie, like, well done, you know, put together, and oh my god, I can't believe that happened.
Garbage lately, so something like this where it's actually competently made is like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I've been doing like 31 Days of Indie Horror, then I'm doing this, Indie Film Cafe, I'm doing 80s horror films, which are actually usually better movies, you know. 90s horror has different stuff, you know, like has some stuff. Some stuff is really good, like From Dusk Till Dawn was a really good movie.
Oh, yeah.
People Under the Stairs, great movie.
It was a pretty good movie.
You know, and then there's movies like this that are, I mean, not terrible. Like, these aren't, like, you know, but it's not something I'd recommend to people. That's the sad thing.
Yeah.
Is I thought I would recommend this movie, and I'd want it on Blu-ray with commentary or something.
You mentioned that it's sort of like a mean-spirited, and it lacks fun. It thinks it's injecting fun by putting in the funny music and some of the comedy bits.
Yeah.
And they think they're doing a black humor kind of a film, but
you said the movie had really like, yeah, you said that the movie had some like humor or some music that just felt sort of out of place.
Do, while the, you know, poor innocent animal's being butchered.
Yeah.
It's just like, no.
No, you need darker music for that scene.
Yeah, and you need to pick a tone, movie. You either have got to be funny or you've got to stick with something horrendous and disturbing. You're walking a very, very precarious line, and you're not doing it very well.
Well, once again, I think it's because John Lafia was used to doing horror comedy. Like, Chucky was sort of a funny character. Mm-hmm. He had funny lines, you know, and everything. And maybe that's what they wanted. Maybe that's what New Line wanted from him, was they wanted something sort of funny. And maybe that was the problem, is that, like, he wrote it not to be funny.
Well,
and then it got changed.
At least in Chucky's case, I mean, when I saw it, I thought of it more as a comedy than a horror. I mean, it's he's a ridiculous character. He can't really be scary. So it's more of a comedy. They didn't really do enough comedy in this for that to be a comedy movie. And what comedy they did do just wasn't very good. So that means this has to rely on the horror part. And it's not so much a horror as just, you know, weird, unbelievable sci-fi with animal torture thrown in there and people being killed by a dog. And that's kind of horrific, but it's not a horror movie per se to me. Nor is it particularly scary, especially when you can sort of telegraph a lot of the plot, a lot of the scenes that happens, but, you know, before they happen. Because you kind of see where things are going. So, yeah, if it had been written a little more skillfully, you might have been able to pull it off. But it just wasn't. And, you know, not having a character to really root for also is one of the problems, too. Because then it's like, you know, you're not going to root for Ally Sheedy's character as much as I love her, because she's such a jerk and a dimwit and starts the problem. You can't really do it for the doctor because he's unethical and kind of a jerk. The cops are dumb. Perry, the boyfriend, is a jerk. Everybody's kind of a numbnut. And you can't really root for the dog either, because even if you like dogs, you're not going to like the fact that he's killing all these other poor animals and just becomes this horrific monster at the end. So who do you end up rooting for? It's unfortunate, but, you know, the way it was put together sort of leaves you out in the cold.
Well, this might make you happy. a little bit. So, while this is a very violent movie, all precautions were taken by both the trainer and the production company to make sure that the dog was never in any danger, mm-hmm. right?
Good.
Most scenes were done mm-hmm. with verbal and visual cues given to the dog, who had been carefully trained for each scene. Food and praise were always given as rewards.
Yay.
So, that makes me happy to know. Like
you could see scenes like... There's the one scene when the security guard is going in to investigate after he sees the light, and Monster Dog goes up, Max, and you can tell his training has been, okay, go up and knock those barrels over. Because, you know, in a movie, there's always empty barrels or empty boxes, and that's how people, you know, people have to interact with them. So he knocks the barrels over, and the barrels fall on the security guy and knock him over. So, yeah, he was clearly trained to do that, and he did a good job, and it looked... pretty good on film.
Yeah, so there's like little things that make me happy, like after reading this stuff, because like I mean it was well done to the point where you really felt sorry for Max at times, because even though he was he was a disturbing fucked up dog, it was a dog playing that, you know, like you care about the, you know, whatever. Care about the actor dog, you know, whatever.
Yeah, he's genetic Franken dog.
The shovel that hits, that Ray hits Max with in the junkyard was actually made of rubber. However, you never actually see the shovel hitting Max on the screen.
A, probably a puppet or something. But yeah. That was disturbing too, because even if it's a disturbing monster dog, I don't want to see a dog being hit in the head with a shovel.
Or a blowtorch.
That was horrible. I don't want to see that.
Like, I mean, I understand if you're trying to, like, protect yourself, you know, but, like, he was doing it originally just to be an asshole, and then he used it to protect himself. But he was gonna blowtorch that dog, and like, normally.
It's difficult. If you're in the woods and a monster attacks you, you got to defend yourself. Nobody's going to think twice about that sort of thing. But people love their dogs and cats, and when you start using blowtorches and shovels and shit like that on them, that's crossing a line for a lot of people, and they don't want to see that, even for a horror movie, even mm-hmm. for a comedic horror movie. It's just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Especially these days. I don't think a production company is going to greenlight that film now.
Right. This movie, I'm surprised New Line Cinema sort of agreed to do it, because even back then in the 90s, like, people loved their dogs. Like, this is not something, like... You know, the only people who would want to watch something like this as a normal thing, you know, like, oh, you know what, I'm going to watch my favorite movie, Man's Best Friend, are people who, like, love to abuse animals or whatever and think it's really funny.
And I get it. That's the writer's thing. I mean, you know, you take a toy, like, and for you turn it into child's play. You think it's something that gives you good, nice, happy feelings. Same thing. You take a dog, you know, Man's Best Friends. You know, and you want to put in some funny bits, like the puppy love song that keeps popping up. And you want to use that, and you're turning it around against the viewer to sort of pervert it. But it's really, really hard to do that and get away with it with dogs and cats and domesticated pets, because people love their pets too much. Yep.
I mean, some people, and me included, I get really sad when I see a dog die as opposed to a human. And Jackie always gets on me about that, because she always says, like, you know, dogs come below humans in a way. You know
what would work as a horror movie today involving dogs? Something like Lady Gaga, where the guy goes there and they stole her dog.
Right.
You know what I mean? And kidnap the dog, and you don't know if you're going to get the dog back. That would work as a horror movie today, because it's, you know, you're worried about the dog. People still love their dogs, but you're not turning the dog into a monster.
You're not turning the dog into the monster, turning the person who kidnapped the dog into the monster, and that makes more sense.
So I'm surprised there haven't been, like, more dog-napping kinds of movies.
So you were mentioning before that, like, there was no likable characters. Even Ally Sheedy, who at first... I mean, even from the very get-go, you sort of don't like her, because she's going in there, you know, here's the thing, like, you always see those nosy reporters in movies or whatever. Most of the time, that does not happen in real life. That person is not going to go through everything just to get that story. They're going to go through the normal channels. They're going to set up a meeting, try to talk to the doctor. If the doctor doesn't want to talk to them, they're going to, you know, they're going to go get their people. You know, I mean, they set up where she can't because she doesn't want the story getting to somebody else. But she's going to take this dog home and everything. I don't.
It's very inconsistent. Like I said, you're set up that you're thinking that she's going to be this unethical, do whatever it takes to get the story kind of reporter, but it's just a way for her to get the dog. Because as soon as she gets the dog, all of that shit goes out the window. And then she imperils her boyfriend and everybody else and puts everybody through all of this shit for this dog, which is clearly not a regular dog. And then at the end, this is the kicker. At the end, and she goes through all of this and it's threatening to kill her. She decides, oh, Max, I love you anyway. And she, you know, was trying to have a reconciliation until Lance Henderson shot her with a shotgun. She was like, really? Were you not paying attention the entire time? So, yeah, it's just the way her character was done was a shame.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, and you love Ally Sheedy. I love Ally Sheedy. You know, you love her and everything. And it was interesting to see her with short hair. You don't really normally see, you know. She had a different look to her. I was digging it. You know, I thought she was adorable.
Yeah.
I thought she was sweet at times, you know, where I think that's the biggest problem with the movie is you're right. It didn't like pick a lane. It kind of went all over the place. And just like when the dog broke the brake line and the guy went all over the place or whatever, you know, like that right there sums up the movie. You know, it's like a bitten brake line.
Yeah. And it's funny because you can see the dog doing just about everything that Chucky does. You can see Chucky would kill a cat. Chucky would tamper with the brake lines. Chucky would
oh my God, you're right.
Yes, you're substituting Chucky for the dog is what you're doing.
You know, the only difference is dog can't talk.
Right.
You know, that's the only difference.
And the doll can get away with it because it's a doll. It's not a pet.
Right. The doll can get away with it because, like, and I hate to say it, most people hate dolls.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Most people love dogs, you know, but they hate dolls, you sure. know. And everything. So
dolls are naturally creepy. Dogs are naturally lovable.
Yeah. So I mean, I get that. Like, I don't mind that they tried to do something different with the dog. You
yes.
know, kind of make it a nice try with that. But honestly, I'm sort of, you know, it's just sad. Like, it could have been so much better. You know, but it just kind of failed in that sense. But I'm glad, like I can't be mad at the movie and say, like, this movie sucks, it was terrible. We didn't talk about, there's certain things, like, there was doggy rape in the movie.
Oh, God, that was horrible.
So, sorry if I triggered anybody, but with the R word.
It just
happened.
And then, you know, it comes out over several scenes, and worst of all is that it's being used for, like, it was used for comic effect. Like, it's supposed to be funny.
It's supposed to be funny. Like, it's so cringy. Like, there's points where you yourself were cringing because, like, the dog's getting raped and then howling, and you could tell, like, that was not a howl of enjoyment.
No.
You know?
But it was done in such a way to be like, ha, 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 isn't that funny? No,
and I think
it's
that
not.
Was, yeah, and I think that's kind of the messed up thing, because I think when I saw it in the first time when I was younger, I probably thought that was sort of funny. And it is not. It's today. You're right. This movie definitely cannot get made today. There's a lot of things. That scene, that's a Me Too situation. That's just terrible. There's doggy rape. There's the dog eats the cat. We talked about that. The dog eats the parrot, which was sad.
Poor parrot.
You know, parrot was like the sweetest thing in the world. He's like, screw you, because the other guy said, screw you.
Screw you. I was going to get really pissed if Puppy Spike had been killed.
Oh, yeah. That was, oh, my goodness. He was my favorite after the whole bit. He survived. Thank God. You know, I was happy that happened. But no. If Spike had died, that movie would have, I think that movie would have went for me. I would have given a thumbs down. Right now, I give it a thumb sideways because it's not the worst movie ever. We've seen worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Like, whatever. Like, Talking Cat, worse than this. You know, but it was sort of like because this is Hollywood. Like, this was made by a studio. This was made by New Line Cinema, you know, even though they're more independent than, you know, like, still Universal.
Would have been a B picture for them. I mean, it wasn't like a big...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think even when you saw it that it was something like... No. This wasn't Child's Play. Child's Play blew up and became... I think even... maybe Child's Play was even... The original one was a little B-movie-like.
Sure.
Second one started to get like, okay, well, we made good money from that one. And the guy who made this made Child's Play 2 before he made this. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe he was just really good at doing that. Like, doing that sort of... style of, like, we saw you were saying doggy cam, right? Or max cam or whatever. Mm. We could see the dog walking around. We see that in Child's Play all the time, where the dog, like, child's running around, you see in the, you know,
it's formulaic. It worked when you did it with the doll, so let's try and do it with the dog. And it just it's just not the same. It's not the same thing. You can't plug different things into the same formula and expect it to work the exact same way.
Well, and it didn't, I don't think. I don't think this made nearly as much. It wasn't a movie that obviously didn't spike any... didn't spike any sequels. It didn't do anything that, you know, sort of become... It didn't blow up. But I mean...
That happened a lot in the 90s, though. You had a lot of production companies that said, oh, well, this works, so we'll just do that, only we'll substitute this.
So let me ask you this, since this is your first time on 90s horror films, and this is going to be the last episode of the first season. We'll be back next year, but we're taking a break from it so that I can do all the other podcasts that I have and everything, so it's fine. We still got 80s horror films, so please tune into that. Were you ever into the 90s horror, or like, was 90s horror kind of where you stopped kind of really liking Hollywood horror?
Well, I hadn't really liked Hollywood horror for a while, but I still loved horror films, so I'd still give them a chance. But, you know, again, this one was one that at the time when it came out and I saw what it was about, I kind of already knew it wasn't going to be my cup of tea, so mm-hmm. I just never really went near it. Even though, again, Ally Sheedy and Lance Henriksen, that's very tempting, but I just never got around to it.
Right.
By the 90s, it really depended on who was making it, whether it was Hollywood or not. It really depended on who wrote it, who directed it. And
if it was like Wes Craven or John Carpenter.
John
Carpenter's 90s horror films were the worst.
Yeah.
You know, those became the, like...
But John Carpenter had the reputation that I was like, okay, the next one hopefully will be better because it's John Carpenter.
And you know it really normally wasn't.
Yeah.
He did, Escape from L.A. And he did...
Rough.
He did, Mars, like... One. Yeah, Ghosts of Mars and Vampires and things
Vampires
like that.
Vampires wasn't bad, I didn't think.
That might actually... I think that is 1990s, so we may do that at some point.
Yeah, it's a shame because I read the book. The John Stakely book from which it came. So I was hoping it was going to be as good as that. It wasn't.
It wasn't. I mean, there were some really good ones. And we're still, you know, next season there'll be some more I'm planning to do. But when I started doing 90s horror, I was like, there's not as many good ones.
And that's why I was saying it became a little bit more formulaic by the 90s. And the 90s is really when you had to start looking more into the independents and looking at some of the other folks. You know, by then, folks like Full Moon had already established themselves. Now, they kind of went in a different direction in the 90s.
No, well, in the 90s, they did, like, straight-to-video, shot-on-video kind of stuff. It wasn't until they went to the 2000s, like, almost mid-2010, you know, or 2010 that... like Evil Bong and stuff like that has just got
they've changed directions several times.
Yeah, several times. But I mean, but what they did was smart, which was, you know, they kind of ebbed and flowed with what was big at the time, and they kind of were ahead of their time a little bit too. New Line Cinema was like that. So this movie was sort of, I feel like it was a chance for them to try to do something. You know, because animal horror, it was a thing. I mean, it's just usually was like a big cheetah or something that got loose or whatever and was killing people.
Remember, you know, mid-90s is right about the time VHS was going away and DVDs were starting to come in. And again, as soon as you have a new change like that, and it makes it cheaper and easier for you to make movies, it ends up starting a new revolution. And same thing, when you start shooting digital and you start producing DVDs, it opens things up for the independent crowd to start coming in. So to me, the 90s is again where indie horror tends to has another blossoming because of that, because of the technology change.
Well, there's also, like, there's some goofs in this movie, so you want to hear some of those?
Sure.
When Ray is talking to Max, Lori's right hand is on her lap. However, in the next shot, her hand is on the chair. Continuity! But see, that's the crazy thing about these movies, is, like, in an independent film, we would catch that. There would be some obvious, you know, whatever. In these movies, you don't catch it unless you're, like, really looking for it, and you're just whatever. You're still, engrossed in what's going on. So there wasn't as many goofs. But after Ray burns Max, the burn on his face changes size and shape. Also, the burned glassy eye disappears and reappears occasionally. So there's a little, I guess that's more of a continuity with makeup. Issues.
Well, and again, it's New Line Cinema, so they can afford continuity guys. They can afford,
and they can fix it where you don't, unless you're really looking for it, you're not paying that much attention.
You notice I didn't say a single thing about the background, about the sets, or about any of that stuff, because they have money. They can dress a set professionally. They can make it so that the background is just the background and you don't notice it. You know what I mean?
Now, real quick, I do want to talk. We talked, I can think briefly about it, but who the fuck was that kid? Like, what? Like, that was the most bizarre stuff. Is that kid comes in, he skates into the house, like, walks in all lily-nilly, like, it's his place.
Fridge, his place.
Gets pizza out of the fridge. And he, the one thing I'm, like, bothered by is the fact that he actually said, oh, this is just like my house. I'm like, why aren't you in your house, kid?
Yeah, it's like, she's like, just lets him do it, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would have liked a little bit more story on that. Like, why is she letting some neighbor in the house? Like, if she had called, if we had seen her call the kid up and say, hey, I got a dog here that needs to be walked. Can you come walk it? Or something like that. I would understand that. Or if he was knocking on the door and she answered and said, you know, hey, do you have any work for me to do around the house? Like, that I can earn some extra money? Something like that. Like, that would make sense. But literally, kid runs in. And a lot of this, I think, feels like it's supposed to be comedy. And I think maybe that was it. Mm-hmm. That there's, like, you know, and there's supposed to be another character. That there was supposed to be an excuse for that kid to have the dog and be walking him for him to get loose and everything.
Right.
But it didn't really matter. Because the dog, she never kept the dog on the leash. She never, you know, like, it just drove me nuts. Like, that stuff like that, just, I'm like, what is this kid? Why is he here? You know?
He's a device.
He's a weird device. Like, there was no point to him except to get him from A to B. Yeah,
he's what the script demands. So he's a device that easily allows the dog to be loose and the dog to do different things.
I know, but it was stupid.
It's just like the mugging scene was just a device simply to show
that, you know, he's loyal.
Then we're supposed to take the dog's side.
And we're supposed to go, oh my God, that'd be great to have a dog who could protect us from a mugger. Mm. You know, right? Like, I think that's really what it was there for, was like people go, oh my God, that's awesome. Like the guy, you know, he attacked he got the purse back, you know, or whatever. They don't know till later that he killed the guy, but we probably should have guessed anyway, because this dog doesn't seem to care any, you know, whatever. He's very violent and scary, you know, to begin with. And so I don't know. Like, it's sometimes I'm wondering why she would have allowed him there or whatever, but, you know.
Again, the script demands it.
Script does. So, let's see, what else? There was, I'm trying to think of all the scenes that we might not have talked about. We did talk about the doggy rape. We talked about
the crash scene where everybody just kind of walks away from it, even the little dog.
Oh, yeah. That was actually, I mean, it looked cool, right? Like, that was a cool scene. you know, and that's Quentin Tarantino. Oh my God. Like, that's awesome. Except Tarantino would have made that realistic.
And it flipped over. I mean, it
flipped over.
Now, I'm glad that it avoided the whole cliche where it blows up, but you couldn't have that because it wants the crash and have everybody survive.
Right.
Not only survive, but walk around and run around and like nothing happened.
Yeah, like I can understand maybe the little dog because like the dog itself could have like kind of just, you know, went into like a little ball and probably survived. But, you know, the Ally Sheedy and all of them, they're underneath things, they were hurt. And then all of a sudden they're just like, I'm just going to get up and just walk around like nothing happened. And including Lance Henriksen, who was like hurt the most, it looked like.
Right.
And he couldn't get up at first at all. Then, of course, he could walk around like no problem. That was ridiculous. But before them, the dog's on top of the car and he's, you know, like trying to get into the windshield of the car. I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, I they've got puppets or animatronics for that shit, but it's...
Yeah, Rick Baker apparently did some of the puppet stuff and did some of the other
effects. Yeah, we didn't mention that, which is actually pretty cool that Rick Baker did. If you don't know, Rick Baker is the special effects guy for American Werewolf in London, The Howling. Well, he sort of gave the, from what I read, The Howling, he gave the rights to some, you know, like he did to make, let somebody else handle the makeup, but he kind of showed him what he would have done or whatever, because he had that contract with the American Werewolf in London. So, but they weren't planning American Werewolf in London to get funding. You know, they almost weren't, you know, whatever.
Yeah, he and Rob Bottin were sort of like the two big guys in the 80s and 90s.
Now, Kevin Yeager, who did the Chucky stuff, the animatronics for Chucky, also worked on this movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how much he did some of the animatronic stuff, too. So I met him. He's actually a really cool dude.
See, they could have done a mashup where, like, Chucky was riding Max like a horse.
Somebody needs to make that into a picture. Like that's a poster right there. Yeah. Chucky and Max together, and then it can say, you know, rest in peace John Lafia, because you know he's the guy who made that shit. That's awesome. Yeah. That'd be cute. If you are listening here and you're a big artist or whatever, please make one of those, because that's amazing. That would just be cute. Even if both of them are psycho killers or whatever, once again, Chucky has killed animals and stuff, but like Chucky's a serial killer. Like that's what serial killers do anyway, to start with.
Right.
They start on cats and, you know, dogs and shit, which I don't approve of. I'm just saying that's what they do. So, Charles Lee Ray was a serial killer. And he's now in the form of Chucky. If that's what they did with this, which I'm guaranteeing you they wouldn't have done because of Chucky, because already, you know, that'd be like going against Chucky. But like if they had done that, where they put the mind or body of a serial killer into a killer dog, you know, that would have been a cool like.
What they did, they put it into a killer cookie, and he doesn't kill any animals. He just kills a bunch of dumbasses.
He usually goes after the dumbasses. Yeah. Ginger Dead Man. Yeah. Man, I miss Gary Busey doing the voice.
I miss Robin Sidney.
I know.
In anything.
Yes, I know. We can't have a podcast without you mentioning Robin Sidney, can we? But yeah, it honestly, I mean, all in all, I found this movie to be sort of... like I said, I don't think I'd want to watch it again. And just because of all the deaths of the animals and stuff. And it was sort of cringy, and it doesn't hold up as well as I remembered it holding up. And that was even not too long ago that I thought it wasn't that, you know? So I'm confused as to, like, what my feelings were.
Pretty decent production, good acting, just bad story and bad writing.
Yeah, it had moments where it was sort of... trying so hard to be like the dog catcher scene, you know.
Oh,
you
God.
Said that was cringy because the dog camouflaged itself because of the chameleon genetics that it had in it, you know, which was ridiculous. But, you know, and we talked about how it pissed acid, which we don't know where that comes from. That comes from nothing. That comes from, okay, well, we'll just make it be able to piss acid because, you know, we need a scene where he kills the...
Because science.
Yeah, yeah. But he's, like, camouflaging himself in these dog catchers who are absolute assholes or whatever, and because...
camouflages himself like the Predator does.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah, he's the Predator. Like, it's a ripoff of the Predator because he just all of a sudden he can, like, you know, whatever, and he starts barking at them. And they run out. The music's all comedy-like. And
he doesn't kill them. He lets them run off.
He lets them run off.
It's a funny ha-ha moment.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, my God, you know, we can't catch this thing, you know, or whatever, we're, you know, right? And they were acting like they were going to be able to bring him in, like, no problem.
Because the bumbling cops couldn't do it, but these two dog catchers, they're the professionals.
And you were saying something about that, too, is, like, when you were watching it going, like, wouldn't you be worried, like, why would cops be chasing after a dog? You know, like, you know what I mean?
A bunch of cops.
I know.
Multiple cars.
Cops don't usually go after animals. And if they are going after animals, there's probably a really good reason. Now, these two cops were bumbling idiots, mm-hmm. the main cops.
Right.
And you were even saying that there's only two cops, pretty much.
pretty much.
The rest of the cops are sort of useless. Even when they shoot at the dog, sort of useless. So, I mean, and the one cop was supposed to be basically a comedic, you know, effect of like, I'm an overweight cop who...
Eats everything,
including like a fucking
milkshake that the kid made the day that before.
Was it the day before? I don't know. It was like something. It was like that maybe earlier that day or whatever.
Yeah, remember when they had that scene where he marches in and makes the milkshake and the sound covers up the attack on Perry.
Yep.
You know, and it was light out. So now it's dark out. So that milkshake
has been standing there
the whole time.
Yep. And you were even saying earlier, how can the dog smell like the poison, you know, and stuff? And just no, I gave it the benefit of the doubt because I just assumed that he didn't just smell the poison. He smelled something was not right with whatever that the guy had. But also benefit of the doubt of like, I'm not going to trust this guy giving me food, you know, so I'm going to come and attack him.
Yeah, well, that makes more sense than smelling the poison.
Yeah. Which he does smell the food first, and then he's like, I guess, you know, and that's when he goes, as he comes out to attack him or whatever. And later, you know, that's, and when he's in the house, you're even saying, shut the door. But it didn't matter when he shut the door. The guy, he just went right through it.
It's just like a stupid, stupid plan. I mean, dude, you're going to poison the dog and you think that's going to solve everything? You're going to explain that to your girlfriend who loves the fucking dog?
No.
Oh, I just poisoned him, honey.
Well, I mean, that dog had to, like, die somehow.
Sure, you call animal control. Come get this dog out of my house.
And then they put the dog to sleep at some point.
They never do that.
No, but that dog would not be able... That dog could escape anything, apparently.
Sure, but at least you could have showed that. At least you could have said, okay, common sense move, they call animal control, they try, the dog breaks out because they can't handle it.
Right. Just like, well, I mean, she did take the dog to Ray's, and...
Oh, God, Ray's.
Yeah, and then the dog... We've talked about that enough, where the dog gets burned and the dog gets...
Yeah, she takes it because he... I guess she knows him and decides,
I know, there's never really
I've got a ranch somewhere and apparently it's a lie and he's going to just keep the dog there and...
Yeah, who was this guy?
I have no idea.
Because they never explain this guy. It's like, nope. She just comes... he's just a movie thing,
He just totally lies to her.
It's just like...
buys it up.
They were just trying to figure out a way to get rid of the dog for a while... so that the dog could come back.
You take it to a vet. They have boarding things at the vets. Keep him there for a week. Bada bing.
Or take him to the pound. Say, look, I can't handle you, buddy. You know, you got to stay here with these people, you know, or whatever. I think she just thought that, like, maybe if she gave him away to somebody and, you know, it could be, like, off, you know? She doesn't have to worry about him anymore, you know?
Yeah, I understand the reason. It's just, why would you pick some dude that you don't even know?
I don't know if she knows him. It seemed like she might have known him. She knew his name, so it's not like... It would have been interesting if she found him in a, like, a newspaper or something, you know, or whatever. But
and I kept thinking, it's like, okay, the guy owns a junkyard, but you also think he's got a 17-acre ranch in the in California? Yeah, come on. Huh? I mean, to own 1/4 acre is like to be a billionaire in California.
That's true.
Come on. Come on.
So, yeah, so that's crazy. So, and then he's like, haha, welcome to my ranch, you know, and William Sanderson, I mean, we just were like, that was a waste of his talent in time. But, you know, maybe the paycheck was good enough for him. He made it as well as he could, you know, he did as well as he could being the bastard that he was, and he's really good at usually playing a villainous character. And how many villains are in this movie?
Everybody is
like a villain,
including the dog, so it's really difficult to root for anybody.
The only good hero is Spike.
Yeah,
and he saves the day by chewing on the stuff, which we see in the beginning. First meet Spike, he goes right for the stuff there. So that should have been like foreshadowing kind of thing, you know, which
should have electrocuted him too.
Yeah. You know, this movie really didn't go by technicals, you know.
No.
If it went by technicals, a lot of this movie would not have been shot. There's just too much stuff that kind of like, okay, well, you know, the audience will get past a lot of stuff because they're invested in the film,
right? You see, you're willing to give most movies the benefit of the doubt. I don't do that anymore because I've seen too much junk, especially coming out of Hollywood. Well, they should know better. It should be written better. Should be done better. No more benefits of the doubt for me.
Well, this is a 93 movie. I mean, whatever. It's an older movie. Now, if this movie was made today and they did every single thing that they did in this, that I would, no, you know, I would say that's a big no-no. But, you know, I mean, they probably would learn.
New Line Cinema is second tier, but you still got a lot more money than an indie production does. More money than Full Moon or Troma or anybody like that would have had.
Yeah. Could you imagine if Troma did this movie?
Troma would have made it fun. They would have made it a lot more fun.
They would have made it a lot more fun, and it would have been cheaper. It would have been cheaper, and it would have been sillier.
Yeah.
And the comedy would have been comedy. And I think that's the problem is, like, obviously, there's a lot of comedy in the movie, and it really feels awkward at times and cringy. Yeah,
they would have gone for it a lot more.
So at the end of the movie, we noticed that the dog, the Lassie kind of character that got raped by the dog, she has puppies, you know, 3 months later, I guess. Is that how long it takes? I guess, I don't know.
That seems a little quick.
I know. So 3 months later, she has a litter of babies and puppies, and
they all look like her except one.
And one looks just like Max.
And he's growling
already. And kind of saying, leave me alone.
Right.
And you can say, oh, no.
There's your setup for the sequel.
Yeah, if you want to do a sequel.
If the receipts had come in, but thankfully it didn't.
Yeah, thankfully people sort of saw through this. And probably, honestly, they didn't want to see a dog killing people.
The cynical side of me is thinking, you know, that's how New Line was looking at it. It's like, let's make another franchise. And this worked for Chucky. Let's see if it works for the dog.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you an example of something. And I want to hear what your thoughts are on this. But, you know, I mentioned earlier we had a dog that was a little violent and did some stuff. And we were sad we had to put it to sleep. You know, we did not want to. My whole family loved this dog, you know. And the thing was, the dog didn't start out that way, you know, right? He wasn't violent in the beginning. He would bark at Flo from the Progressive commercials, you know? And we were like thinking she would never be allowed to eat dinner at the house, you know? Because she knocks on the door and they're like, rawr! Did not like Flo, but didn't like anything white. And I think there was something with the white screen and white backgrounds or something that you just saw the head and just made him feel uncomfortable. I don't know what it was, but point was, did not like anything dressed in white. Just wasn't his thing.
Ooh, there's vets dressed in white.
Yeah. Oh, can't help that. You know, what are you gonna do? Can you please change? You know, like your clothes.
Just like a cow, please.
Yeah. Well, that's white. You're screwed. So anyway, the thing with our in real life, right, is we didn't like we noticed like there were things that was happening to him or whatever, and we were trying to get him fit, you know, whatever. But it didn't start out with this dog was like already barking at everybody and causing, you know, scariness to, you know what I mean? Like there's that scene where the guy, the boyfriend, gets attacked by the dog basically, and dog scares the dog to death, or the boyfriend to death, makes him run to the, like the thing, and that was obviously like a trailer moment.
And
but
you mean the moment that the dog should have been kicked out of the house for good,
right? That's what you even said.
Yeah,
you know, so you're like, that's, you know, right then and there, you know, this dog's a little like psycho, and you would not want to have him at all, like around, you know, and stuff. That would have been the case if we had that dog scaring the shit out of us from the very beginning. We would have said, we can't take this dog. We have to give him up to somebody. Go to a no kill shelter. Have him find somebody who can, you know, right, like take care of him. But that's the thing. Like when you get dogs, you don't know how they're gonna be. And when they're like this crazy, you don't want to keep them. So the fact that she kept this dog and kept, you know, whatever the whole time, even though he was crazy.
Against all common sense.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. So right. In the end, I just wanted to say that this movie could have been a lot better. Fortunately, it just didn't work out that way.
I think the biggest problem is he kind of mixed her character up. You know, she should have been the reporter who doesn't care about anything except getting a story and will do whatever it takes. Instead, she turned into the animal activist who has the thing for the dog.
Right.
Those two things are not necessarily the same. They're mentioned early in the script as separate things, but they ended up converging into one character, and they shouldn't have.
Yeah, it should have been, maybe it should have been the exact opposite. Maybe it should have been the African-American girl was the reporter trying to get all the stuff. And then she was the one who was there to care about. Because that was the thing. Like, that should have been the thing. It's like, she was the one who didn't want to break in. Because she didn't want... Because then we would have cared for her the whole time. If she had actually... If Ally Sheedy the whole time was like this really sweet, endearing soul who cared about animals. Didn't want to see these animals get hurt. And then the other girl was like, the reporter's like, no nonsense. We got to get this story, whatever. That would have worked, because then you could have showed those two characters. It would have, you know, and then she could have brought the dog home.
Right, and it would have made sense that once the dog goes nuts, the animal activist person who just cares about the animal would have been fine with it, as opposed to what happened to the story. Oh, we forgot all about it. That was 40 minutes ago in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
And then you could have made the boyfriend be completely like the villain too, like, or whatever, because
right. And it makes more sense because he even said, oh, you brought this parrot back with you. I don't know why you did that. And, you know,
right.
She could have had a history of doing that.
And that was sort of what they were trying to imply, that she has the history of bringing pets home and caring for animals more than she cares about her own boyfriend.
Right.
And so if they had done stuff with that, where he was this dick who just didn't care, you know, about animals, hated animals, you know, right? We were rooting for him to die, right? This whole time, we weren't rooting for him to die because we were so confused by his character, like, the whole time. Was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? Like, there's times where, like, I felt sorry. Why did he get, like, the bricks done? I mean, just because the dog was jealous?
Right.
Like, there was, it's just confusing at times.
It just wasn't, the characters were not fleshed out fully. They weren't thought out well, and the writing just wasn't there.
No. So all in all, I think it would have been a better movie had they kind of switched things up and made things different, but they didn't. They did it the way they did it, and I think honestly, this movie didn't do as well in the box office as it probably should have.
And there's a reason.
Yeah, and there's a reason. Another reason also, once again, is the dog is, you know, a killer dog, and nobody really wants to see that. Nobody wants to see their dog, the idea that their dog could be a killer dog,
right.
unless it's an independent film, more or less, you know, even, you know, a Hollywood film, they don't, people want to have this like loving kind of thing, even in a horror film.
Right.
You know,
and even movies like Zombievers gets away with it because very, very, very few people have beavers as a pet.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So the pets coming in attacking the dog, the beavers attacking the dog and killing it, which it was silly because when you see it, it looked fake, you know, and everything. They did it on purpose, you know, to make it look fake.
Because they knew that they weren't going to be able to make it serious.
Yeah.
You just know when you see that.
Yeah. And this movie, they had every opportunity to make things serious. And they went for comedy, and probably because either John Lafia wanted comedy in the movie, or the studio said, you're the child's play guy, make this funny. Mm-hmm. You know, so there might have been some studio interference, or it may have been what the director wanted.
Comedy to make it a comedy, not enough scares to make it a horror film. It fails in both aspects.
Exactly. But oh well.
In my opinion.
All in all, it wasn't, like we said, it's not the most worst movie you've ever seen, especially through Hollywood. It's not the best movie we've ever seen. It's definitely not that. It's kind of in the middle. It's kind of blah.
Kind of typical.
You know, it's kind of, yeah, it's a typical horror film, especially in the 90s. And this is early 90s. This is pre-Scream. So this is sort of when things, sort of horror was sort of like flatlining at that particular moment in time. And that's another reason why I wanted to do this 90s podcast, is because there was a lot of films that at this time, like, that started maybe going toward humor and failing, Vampire in Brooklyn, things like that. And then, which we're gonna cover one time, because I you know, we have to talk about the movie that I think almost killed horror, you know, and wasn't Wes Craven's fault at all. Maybe it just wasn't, you know, the right movie or whatever. But this movie sort of kind of went that, you know, like thing where it should have been a lot better than it was, but wasn't. So
yeah, it's just like, you know, that awful Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie that they made with
Renee Zellweger.
Yes, that's around this period.
The Next Generation.
No,
yeah,
it was so bad.
Oh god, that'll be talked about at some point, I'm sure, because you can't do a 90s horror films without going to the bad stuff that you know, that actually came from it. But you know, there's a lot of good horror that came from this stuff, and you know, and this is 93. This was, I believe, if it wasn't 93, it was like 91 as People Under Stairs. So like that time period, it was starting to kind of become like, you know, semi, like it was starting to lose itself then. Mm-hmm. And I think Vampire in Brooklyn might have been 93 or so, you know, or 94. So it was starting to, like, horror was sort of starting to fall, and you didn't have, like, they were trying to make it too comedic at times, and you could tell. And this one just did not work for that. If they took out the humor and they took out the grimness of it at times, and they kind of just made it more fun, you know, not, it didn't have to be humorous, but it could be fun.
It was lacking in fun, and what little they tried to put in was very forced.
Yep, exactly. Well, thank you, Paul, for coming on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And join us next year. 2023 in January. I'm planning to bring this back, but it's gonna be a while, because we got other podcasts on here, and I'm happy to do this one. I will be back. It's just let me get through a few other ones first, and then I'll come back and we'll do this, and we'll launch this when we relaunch 80s horror films again.
There,
so it'll be a good time for you guys to check it out. So thank you guys for listening, and if you guys have any recommendations for next year, other ones that we haven't done,
write it on a $20 bill and send it to us, and we'll look at it.
We'll definitely take a look at it then. You know, but thank you guys for checking this out, and join us next year for a whole new season of 90s horror films.
Yay.
Bye, everybody.
Who let the cows out? Moo, 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 moo.
Test, test, test. Test, test, test. You test.
Test, 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 test.
Testies? Hello, hello, hello. It's still red.
I don't have a butthole. Where is my butthole? How am I going to poop without a butthole?
Still a little Are you good? Oh, it's not red right now, so that's good.
For you? What about me?
You're definitely not red.
How am I going to poop without a butthole?
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Why is it red again?
Because you project.
Hey, everybody, and I'm not even... Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Every time I say back, it gets red. You know, whatever.